in many ways. This past Sunday was just like every Sunday at Boogie's Wrestling Camp in Charlottesville. The men and women who are training here were in the ring, practicing their craft, hoping to one day make it to the big time, the way their mentor did.
Hey guys, we're gonna do a manager's drill.
But in fact, this was a special Sunday. The standing room only crowd was there to celebrate Jimmy Valiant's 50th anniversary in professional wrestling. These are Boogie's fans, but truly, they've become his family.
Thank you so much. Warms my heart. Thank you for everybody coming out and just spending the day with Angel and myself. And 50 years, man. I started wrestling in 1964, and now it's 2014, man.
Former world champion, Hands of Stone, Ronnie Garvin, was on hand as well to greet fans and to celebrate Boogie's incredible milestone.
You know, I go way back from, I think it was late 70s, early 80s with him. And I think he's one of the best. Good personality. He's the boogeyman. That says it all.
Amazingly, after wrestling in the 1960s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and into the new millennium, at the age of 72, Boogie still lacing up his boots and entertaining the fans. In 50 years, he's seen and he's done it all.
10,000 matches, brother. 4 million miles on driving on them highways. It's all over, but hey, I made it. Bless the Lord. I give him all the thanks. You know, it happened, and it's the greatest day of my life.
Baby, your land blow anniversary show. We just saw Counting Crows. They were terrible, sang unnatural. Although live was pretty dope.
Live fucking ripped, dude. Always and forever.
I don't say dope, but I feel like that word fit better right there.
Were you like workshopping some other words here and there you thought maybe you were going to use into that?
I was just, you know, end it anyway. I felt like ending the sentence, but okay. In the heat of the moment, I was like,
I'm going dope.
Dope will man, line up better with all
live
those
hasn't cardos. Lost a step.
Yeah, that's the big news.
Break up for
show.
A few years, get back together. It's like it never even happened.
Right. We're celebrating 1 year of Baby Oil and Blow with this show right here, but that's not even what I want to talk to you about right now. I want to talk to everybody out there about how good the band live still is.
I mean, you thought like maybe they'd just be trading on nostalgia. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go to this 25th anniversary, yeah, Counting Crows thing that live's also at, and it's just going,
right,
to be like, oh, we'll play the old hits and go through the motions,
yeah,
and I'll take my shirt off at the end.
Right.
As well, expected. This is kind of all exactly what happened,
but it
was still super
cooler.
Cool.
Way
it was
cooler.
Still super cooler.
Like, I would have believed you, like, if I missed the show and you were like, oh, yeah, I saw it live at a county fair last week. I was like, oh, okay.
Who knows? That might be where
sense.
They had been last week before they got on this Counting Crows tour.
We saw them in not an arena. It was a outside pavilion.
Close
but
enough.
It was a big venue. And
not very full.
They had an arena rock setup. I mean, they had
pretty much
walls
had our,
of half stacks.
Had our run of the place.
Yeah. Absolutely. We sweet lifed it.
Here I am in your life. Here you are in mine. Yes, we have a sweet life. Most of the time, you and me, we got the world to see. So come on down. Just me and you know what to do. So come on down.
Hashtag sweet. sweet life. We don't. From now on, I'm not going to any events unless we're in a suite.
Yeah,
fuck that's that sitting out in chairs with the ham and eggers shit. Like I'm through with it. Nothing else to do with it.
After doing all in a suite and then just backdooring it.
It's like, oh, this is why celebrities hang out in suites at events.
Right.
Sure, you're very far away from the thing happening,
but you're also not a part.
But you're also very far away from all the idiots who showed up to it.
It's great to be a part of a thing without having to be a part of a thing.
Mm-hmm. I just need a gatekeeper. I need like somebody standing by a door to tell people like, oh, you're not allowed in there.
Did we have personal bathrooms that the plebs couldn't use?
Yeah, for sure. They were down a really long hall. I don't know.
That doesn't matter.
It took me a long time to get there.
You got to see all those 40 and 50-year-olds smoking the ganj.
Legs really moving. Oh, yeah, there was a lot of ganj going on at this Counting Crows show.
We had like a two concessions areas up there. You could get nachos, popcorn, just any kind of booze.
On demand. Like, there's no lines because the regular people can't come up
there. They're not allowed up there. And also, even if you don't want to take the walk to get it, there's a young lady that was like, hey, you guys want me to get anything for you?
Very affable.
Yeah.
Just very friendly. A little bit scatterbrained. But, you know.
Yeah.
Wind was blowing up a gale that day. Everybody was a little bit out of sorts.
Yeah. Except for Live.
No,
it was on point. Just
cold shock out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Fucking storm clouds rolling in. And they were just like, don't matter.
Yeah.
Let's get on stage and let's rip it up like we always do.
They're like, lightning crash? Who gives a fuck? We wrote about that.
And then
that.
Counting Crows like got shook out of bed right before their set. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, what? Live's over?
Huh? What?
All right, I guess we'll go fucking Cadillac our way through a 6-song set. We'll stretch everything out a good 10 minutes by just having Adam fucking freestyle bullshit some dumb life lessons in the middle of all the verses and the choruses.
It was really weird. Did he do that when you saw them before?
I think it was more pronounced this time, but that's kind of always been their approach. But like at this point, they're just like...
Because he said that was our gift
that
for
was,
the 25th
anniversary. Yeah, that was his gimmick because it was such an anniversary. It's like, I'm going to do a fucking VH1 Storytellers for you here. Except maybe it was just because I was drunk and not paying attention. But he didn't tell me anything of note. There was nothing he was like saying about these songs where I was like, oh, that really opened that song up for me.
Yeah.
No, it was just like... Oh, he's just fucking bullshitting about what he did today in the middle of this song while the backing band just fucking noodles for a while.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he finish the song?
Why, or just sing the song the way that everybody wants him to sing it so we can all sing along with it.
Yeah, that's what I gotta say. The highlight of the evening was definitely Colorblind.
Yeah.
He stuck to what worked with Colorblind.
Right.
And bam, knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, that was really good.
I got real emotional.
Fuck yeah.
All right, let's get into the intro. Why don't you introduce us what we are and what we're doing here?
Yeah, okay. Well, this is the wrestling show we do. It's been 1 year of this shit show now, and it's called Baby Oil and Blow. There's two people that host it. I'm one of them. Yeah. September 5th was 1 year.
Okay, I know we're at 50 episodes, so that means we only took two weeks off over the course of the year then.
That's
pretty solid.
Yeah. I think we're like right up there with Raw, I want to say. Yeah,
the
we only took 2 weeks.
Running syndicated pro wrestling show posted Thursday mornings on iTunes at this point.
Absolutely. We're your hosts. I'm Matt O. With me as always is you're going to be the Ed Kowalczyk to my Adam Duritz. You are
Is that
Nate
opposite
Adams.
Of last week?
Well, you're live.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Live and in living color here.
Oh, did I use that one last week?
I mean, unless you
reverse
what we were.
I don't know.
Do you remember a week ago?
Oh, no,
you were at the
end of, I was at the end
of
that.
At the tail end
drunk.
Of like a two-week fucking drunk
Ooh,
last week.
Man, and then we went out afterwards.
Mm, we sure did.
Oh, I was wasted by the time we left the bar Monday.
Mm.
That's one of the only things I can remember.
Okay, well, that's
just
really all that happened of note from what I from what I can recall.
Yeah, but I'm happy to say
back in the saddle again.
Yeah,
after this big build of talking about Counting Crows and Live for all these weeks, it's finally done. We've seen that
right.
Back to work like normal. So you're not just a drunken fool all the time.
Yeah, there's two whole days where I didn't drink any booze.
Ah, finally, I knew we could get back there.
Yeah, so I feel good? Question mark.
Mm-hmm. I feel really good.
We got one big event left to get through.
Do we?
Yeah, Hell in a Cell this Sunday.
Gotten through everything. Okay, I have gotten through everything.
What?
I got a nice little stretch now where I can buckle back down, you know.
Gear up for
get control
Music
of myself
Box
again.
Of Horrors.
Music Box of Horrors, October 13th, our yearly 24-hour horror movie festival, is the next big thing I got. Until then, man, I'm not breaking that diet. I'm fucking sticking to that training. I'm gonna
so we can go hard.
I want to look in. I want to show up to that horror movie festival where everybody just looks terrible.
Yeah,
I just want to show up looking great. People, that's my goal right now.
People really like.
I want to be the belle of the ball.
People really like to tell me how good you look when they haven't seen you in a while.
It's because I look great.
It's weird, though. It's like, yeah, I know. I see him all the time. Like, why don't you tell him that? Maybe he'd like to hear
that.
Yeah,
or
like,
why don't you come around every once in a while and, you know, make yourself fucking useful.
Shitheads.
Like a bunch of fake friends and fucking posers
losers.
Out there.
Losers. Every one of them coming from two guys hosting a wrestling show.
That's right.
Fucking losers.
Ugh. Disgust me.
Not us, you.
Did I know you've had a busy week getting out of your, you know, the hole that you sunk into, dragging yourself out of that hole. So at any point during the week, did you stop and like reflect and be like, whew, I got to pick some pro wrestling news to talk about, some modern wrestling
news?
Yeah. Okay.
Hell in a Cell.
Oh, that was your thing, is that it's this Sunday?
Yeah.
That's big news, brother.
Do you have bigger news to talk about?
Who's in the cell this year? Just every match? Have they gotten to the point where every match is going to be in there yet? Because you know that's coming.
It seems like it's real dialed down, scaled back. The only ones I can think of are Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns for the strap in a cell.
That could be a lot of fun if they come up with something creative for Braun to do, some creative way for him to pull down the whole cell and destroy it or something.
Ooh.
Maybe like kill like half the audience on one side of the arena.
Yeah, that's immediately what I saw as well.
Sounds good.
So
that's my prediction.
Okay.
Braun kills at least four people
match
in the audience.
Match just ends because Braun killed a handful of people. I believe AJ and Joe is going to be in a Hell in a Cell. That's pretty
heated.
I mean,
that could be legitimately good.
Yeah.
That big Samoa Joe, I think, is most notable match to date in pro wrestling was that cage match he had with Kurt Angle. We'll see if he could top it.
Oof. Well,
top it in the cell with AJ.
You sure it wasn't that BFG match we saw with Sting?
He did take that header down like six flights of those all in stairs.
There was no reason
he
for
was
that.
All in on jumping down about seven flights of stairs up in
for
the,
those 300 hardcore
the cheap
fans
seats
in the audience.
Yeah, I think he really hurt himself night.
He did it up there in the cheap seats because, you know, they had plenty of room. No one was around.
To be fair, it was a TNA show. They were all cheap seats.
Ba-boom.
If we had given 2 seconds of thought to it, we could have probably like second marketed ourselves fucking front row to that shit for maybe like $50 a pop.
Oh, like we did for Counting Crows. Yeah. We could have definitely had a suite.
Or,
that's
you know,
for sure.
We got comped that suite for being close and personal friends with, the opening act, Beer Forest.
Beer
so
Forest.
That's how we
Booze.
Got in there.
Booze Forest.
Booze Forest. Yeah.
That's an inside joke. We call them Beer Forest because we're such
our good
close friends.
Friends. Shout out to them. I don't know. We were getting coffees while they were playing, but you know, they from a distance they sounded like they had some real potential.
Coffee line was deep, son. And then I think you got a
very chilly.
You got Jeff Hardy and Shinsuke. No, Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton.
No, that was from 2003's Hell in a Cell. You got your notes crossed.
No, this
that
is,
was from 15 years
this
ago.
This is Jeff Hardy's first ever Hell in a Cell match.
That would have been the card in 2003, so you're kind of confused.
Jeff Hardy's first ever Hell in a
Cell
match.
Well, he'll definitely be jumping off the top of that thing, but at this point we've seen so many people jump off the top of that thing that who fucking cares? Well,
what's he going to do to make it special?
Nothing. He's just going to do a fucking swanton off the top of that thing, bust through a bunch of shit. That's what he does in every match.
What's your favorite Hell in a Cell spot of all time?
Favorite Hell in a Cell spot of all time has got to be... it's got to be something Triple H did for sure.
Nope, there's one answer.
It's when he pedigreed Jericho on top of the cage.
Incorrect answer.
It's just somebody topped H? I don't think so.
It's when Rikishi got thrown off the top of the Hell in a Cell into the back of the dump truck.
That dump truck full of hay?
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Because you remember when Rikishi was in the
I preferred when Canyon invented that spot during the WCW triple tier cage match. So
you know I'm
like,
a fan.
I was like, Rikishi, pretty cool, but seen it before, man.
Big fan of that era because that's our guy, David Arquette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, world heavyweight champion.
He's really making the rounds again.
He is,
huh?
Man.
Seems like there's a real resurrection of David Arquette as far as the wrestling industry goes.
I think he's even doing like straight to DVD movies too, but that doesn't matter because like he's out there wrestling.
Are we building to an eventual Macaulay Culkin David Arquette match? Because I feel like somebody should be doing that. Both these guys keep showing up to wrestling shows.
Yeah.
Let's
Arquette's legitimately wrestling in them.
Yeah. Macaulay Culkin was in a match too where he set up a bunch of traps in the ring and a bunch of indie guys did a bunch of dumb comedy falling into his traps.
That's pretty good stuff.
That's what pro wrestling has come to.
Pretty much.
Oh,
yeah.
Son of a
bitch. It's not a stretch.
Son of a bitch. Let's get out of talking about modern pro wrestling because it always just gets me so depressed.
So we're talking about 80s wrestling?
Let's get talking about 80s pro wrestling, which always
brings
me right back up because, not true. Doesn't get me pumped up at all. This week we're doing a rundown of Smack'em Whack'em, a Coliseum home video release.
Not in the 80s.
From 1993. So, this rundown is just brought to you by Coliseum home video.
It's a special treat for you.
A titan of home video releases. Go out there. Just find them all. Just find Germany's favorites. That's one that's pretty good.
Yeah,
like,
all those movies they made.
Sure. Yeah.
You need me to list them or because I think you know them.
Good on them.
Right?
First match of this compilation tape that, it was clearly very meticulously curated. Smack'em Whack'em. First match, Crush versus the Berserker. Kona Crush. We're in Kona Crush here right here.
Kona Crush.
He's wearing the neon colors. He's talking about his Hawaiian heritage. Crush wins with the Skull Crusher. Maybe the most believable and least stupid finishing maneuver of all time.
Yeah.
Second match, we've got the Repo Man.
Repo Man.
He's in there versus one half of the Natural Disasters, the Earthquake. And Quake wins with that big butt smoosh that he does. He just smooshes people with his butt.
Smoosh.
Next up, we got Yokozuna in there versus the Hibachi Grill.
Yep.
Yokozuna goes over. He eats
big.
He eats like 12 pounds of meat over the course of this segment.
Oh, more than that.
This is all. A lot of shrimps.
It was 11 steaks, 5 pounds of shrimp, and I think they said 5 to 6 pounds of rice.
There's a lot of sushi in there, too.
He did
a lot of sushi as an aperitif.
And the dessert that they didn't show.
An IC title ladder match. We got the champion, Bret Hart, defending against the challenger, Shawn Michaels. Bret retains after he grabs that IC title belt and pulls it down. This is sort of turning into the Bret Hart show, because next we have a match versus Kamala for the WWF title match.
Dude,
breaking news.
Giant?
Bret Hart is the new WWF champion.
What?
Who saw that coming? Bret wins with a roll-up after some failed interference. Coming up next, our third Bret Hart match in a row. They're loving it, the Smack'em Whack'em. A spoiler alert, it's a title match for the WWF title. The champion, Ric Flair, gets the challenger, Bret Hart. So since they already showed us Bret with the belt, it makes sense that Bret would win it, which he does with the sharpshooter. In front of a Canadian crowd, too.
Correct.
This might be the beginning of Bret, getting egomania around what he can and can't do.
Saskatchewan.
In front of Canadian crowds.
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Spoiler alert, that doesn't end well for him.
Oh.
Our final match, our big finale, is not the never-before-seen title switch, weirdly.
Mm-mm. No.
They didn't put that on last. Instead, they put on Razor Ramon versus The Undertaker.
Duh.
Fine little match, except that, it ends with Ramon walking out on the match because he decides he can't beat The Undertaker. It's a little bit of a low point to end your video on, if you ask me. I don't know. I
just
got in here and moved around the match order a little bit.
Just like when he walked out on all of us.
But never on drugs. Never walked out on drugs.
No. Just copious amounts.
That does it for our 5 count. We were supposed to do a WCW this week. And we didn't have to. I gave us a treat because it's our 50th episode.
This is for you, the fans.
So we got through that rundown real quickly.
Way to be with us for a year.
Now let's get into our 5 count where we won't be bitching about how convoluted and packed full of nothing and dumb this thing was. We'll be bitching about other stuff, I'm sure.
Right, but it doesn't matter because it's a one-off and go fuck yourself is the moral of the story.
As it usually is.
My number one that I want to talk about is the Crush versus Berserker match.
Okay, let's talk about that.
It was good to see Crush and Berserker is my main point.
I hadn't seen those guys in a while.
Yeah. I was like,
hadn't revisited any 1993 era. We've said it before. We'll say it again. We have a very strict rule. NBA Jam's release was the end of the 1980s, all the way up to 1993. We can talk about wrestling, and it's still considered to be 80s.
Sure.
Decades bleed into another.
Crush? He was really over here in this one.
I mean, the little kids were doing his crush your hands together thing.
Oh, everybody was doing
quite
that.
Quite a lot, and I was pretty shocked at that, because you know, Crush isn't very cool.
But he was really over.
Yeah, it seemed like people liked him. And at least the kids. It seemed like the kids especially liked him. But what's that to say? Because I think 99% of the crowd here in 1993 seemed to just be kids and then like the parents that had been drugged there by their kids. Sure. Long gone are the days of the 1980s shit we've been watching where the crowd's just full of old ladies and people of all ages, teenage girls, and just everybody's into it. Right. No, we're getting into that era where the only people still watching it are kids and the parents that get drugged there, which, you know, soon will give way to the era where the only people there are white dude virgins in their 20s.
Right. So pay attention here, folks. The shit's cyclical. Mm-hmm. Y'all complaining about TV PG right now?
TV PG.
It's going to get edgy again eventually. Who knows when?
They're doing a little bit of that over in the Impact Wrestling now, it seems like.
Yeah.
They got a lot of blood going on. Yeah. They got a lot of like over-the-top shit where people are trying to kill each other and stuff. And I'm thinking like, if these guys can get on a decent channel again and take this edgy shit somewhere, maybe we can get a new product where, like, you know,
just get somebody to watch
that new era of 16-year-old dudes who just like stupid, violent,
kill each other.
Body, just, you know, morality-free bullshit would be like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Because all they've seen from this 16 years in their life up to this point is going to be
Roman Reigns.
That PG fucking WWF shit. You get wrestlers cussing and busting each other's heads open and like chicks showing their boobs and stuff. It's gonna blow a lot of 16-year-old minds.
That's for damn sure.
It's gotta come back around, man.
Most people have the wrong impression about the World Wrestling Federation. We're a non-violent form of entertainment.
We never use sex to enhance our image.
As athletes, we understand the importance of being positive role models. We're good, wholesome family entertainment.
We're trying to make the world a better place for mankind.
WWF attitude.
Get it?
My second point about Crush was, why did he wear kick pads?
I don't know. It was the style of the time.
Was it?
No, not really. He was kind of early on
a little,
that.
Yeah, a little. A
couple years later, everybody would start showing up with kick pads, you know, working that indie style, or I'm small now, so I got to kick people hard to try and make my matches believable. Yeah, but, Crush, I don't know. I'm going to guess just he didn't really care much about his outfit.
He probably didn't put that together.
And he got repackaged and like just like the seamstresses backstage, like the WWF sewing lady or whatever, was like,
this'll look
good. We need something that looks vaguely Hawaiian, god damn it.
Yeah.
No, not boots. They don't wear boots in Hawaii.
Yeah. All wearing
that's
sandals. Everybody's on vacation.
That's my guess on that. But Crush, if any way they could have taken him after debuting him as part of Demolition,
right?
Just like, oh, your new thing is you're a fucking surfer dude. We're gonna have we're gonna have Brutta Iz come out and sing you to the ring at WrestleMania or whatever the fuck. I'm sure that didn't happen because he never got over. But
would have been cool.
I don't know. Not a good. I don't think his career ever bounced back after becoming this Kona Hawaii thing.
I'm sorry. How about when he was Evil Crush and fought Randy Savage in that Falls Count Anywhere match?
Oh yeah, that was after this. That was after this. So at least they tried to tweak it a little bit. Like, this isn't working. It was over with little kids apparently for like 1 month in 1993. Let's
turn him
back to sort of a more demolition-y type thing.
Yeah, Evil Crush, where he had like,
he seemed more like a futuristic demolition. Yeah.
And then wasn't he in the Disciples of Apocalypse?
Yeah, but at that point, nobody even remembered who he was.
That he was the guy from all the other things.
Kids had stopped watching, and now
that's fair.
Everybody just wanted to watch Stone Cold flip people off.
What was he in WCW?
Was
he in
NWO's
Chronic?
Bryan Adams, one half of the NWO B team, and then yes, he was one half of Chronic. So he went pretty long, like. He made it all the way up to the acquisition of WCW, where he came back and whoever was in charge at the time was like, oh, wait, these guys can't wrestle. We'll fire them right away.
You want to talk about Berserker for a second?
Okay.
So my girlfriend was trying to nap while I was watching that because she had a headache.
Rightly so.
And she goes,
women and headaches, though. Come on. What's up with that?
What's that noise?
Oh, you mean the huss?
Yep. And then I reminded her about how our niece once wore fuzzy boots and a fuzzy vest, and I made her take a picture, and then I wrote Huss over it.
Sure.
because it's genius, because she looked like a little berserker.
A little tiny berserker.
Yeah. I'm going to post it.
Yeah, I don't know. At this point, Bruiser Brody was dead. Big John Nord kind of looked like him. Mm-hmm. Might as well try to rip off Bruiser Brody. Sound reasonable to me. Maybe would have worked a little bit better if that extra like Viking angle wasn't thrown on top of it. I don't know. That's a little bit cartoony.
John Nord, the Viking.
They're really leaning into like the cartoony shit here in 1993. I noticed, absolutely. Like, in the main event, it's still just like guys who sort of have well-rounded, decent characters, but like their mid-card, they got no idea what they're doing, and everybody's just like, God damn it, give them a gimmick.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's steroid trials.
Yeah, I don't got time to think about stuff.
Weird year for wrestling.
Yeah, so I just wanted to talk about that because I felt it was a really important part of the era.
My number one I needed to talk about was the little bumpers we get introducing these matches. It's Lord Alfred Hayes.
Talking about the Bushwhackers
in a dilapidated,
room?
Their whacking room. Apparently they're building a masturbatorium.
They kept saying
whacking. The Bushwhackers are building a whacking room. So it's him and Lord Alfred, and it's just the Bushwhackers screaming directly into the camera. Just,
yeah.
Isn't it good to walk in the arena and to see all the kids swinging their arms?
Oh, not only the kids, Cousin Luke, but all our mates out there, all the Bushwhackers, as we're coming in, Cousin
just
Luke.
Screaming every word they say, but not saying anything worth listening to, and then, like, they knock some holes in the wall.
Right.
And it was just interminable. I couldn't deal with it, and I was like, oh, man, what have I gotten us into? Am I going to have to listen to these guys screaming into the camera in between every match? But then... Whew, things came around and was all worth it during the amazing scene where they accidentally electrocuted Lord Alfred Hayes, which I loved. You got him doing some acting. You got some like flashing blue lights to like try and, I don't know, be a special effects version to get electrocuted. His hair got like gelled up, so his hair was all standing on end, and like the camera was moving in and out a little bit. This was... some really, really terrible stuff that went full circle to really, really good for me. I started loving it.
Do you think you were a little extra into it on account of how much you've been watching Home Improvement lately?
I'll take that in the opposite way. I think is why I was so disappointed with it going in. I was like, oh, they're doing construction accident gags. Like,
they're no Tim
I've seen
Al.
The cream of the crop. I've been watching the cream of the crop here, and what they're going to do isn't going to be holding up to it whatsoever.
I respect that
What the
view.
Fuck's with this amateur hour? Like, don't waste my time. Well, I don't know. 1993, that's a little bit before Home Improvement's debut. You got to wonder, how much might have Tim Taylor... Tim Allen taken from this Smack 'em Whack 'em Coliseum home video release and been like
big Bushwhackers
when he's out there pitching shit to like
Michigan's own the Bushwhackers,
all the three or four different channels back then, just like, I've got this great idea, I stole it from the Bushwhackers,
right?
He's maybe owes Coliseum home video a little bit of residuals on that shit.
Yeah, there was a lot of like the Bushwhackers like just doing like these long drawn out like oops where they're like,
but nothing set up like well. Just like, we're going to hit this with a hammer, and you didn't do too much damage to it, but we're pretending like it's a disaster or whatever. But no, that's actually a pretty sturdy wall. Like, it's holding up pretty good.
Right.
Maybe you should have, like, I don't know, had one of your fucking props people set up a few things that, like, would have worked out better than this.
Yeah.
Very clear that this was getting filmed small budget, very short schedule. Just get in there and knock it out, guys. We'll do it in an afternoon.
It was weird.
It was weird and it was bad, but, you know, they didn't go back to it as many times as I feared, and just that dumb Lord Alfred Hayes cartoon electrocution made it worth it for me.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Oh, wacky day.
I got a number two.
Yep.
If he,
I knew you would.
If he
haven't let me down yet.
If he is on a show,
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk about it, and that's my guy Repo Man.
Okay.
So we're going to talk Repo Man Earthquake.
I know how much you like the Repo Man.
Repo Man.
My number two, I'll just get it out there real quick, and then I'll let you talk about the Repo Man. My number two is just, Jesus Christ, Repo Man is the coolest fucking music I've ever heard.
Yeah.
That was my note. That was my note.
He's cool, man.
That's real good music.
He's cool. I know you're a demolition guy, but Repo Man's really cool.
You might have to sell me on this a little bit.
Okay, the music, right?
The music's real good. For sure that.
How about that outfit?
The Hamburglar outfit?
It's not Hamburglar.
Not 100% on board with.
He's just got like a bandit type outfit, but then it also has tire marks on it because he repos cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the tire marks,
I thought been
unfortunately,
ran over
look a little
so
bit,
many times.
Look a little bit like the stripes that Hamburglar wears, but there's
got,
no hat. He's not wearing a hat.
He's got the little burglar's mask, though.
He does, well, I told you he's got a little bit of a bandit's outfit.
There
yeah.
should have been a hat, though. Yeah. I think that would have helped out because now he no longer has his glittery, long but balding demolition hair.
Right.
He's just a
balding guy
short guy haircut.
With a mustache.
Which, yeah, doesn't do much for me
what
as
about
far
the mustache?
As the look goes. I mean, the mustache, it was questionable when it was covered in face paint during all those years. Now that it's not, I'm just like, you've turned into one of those wrestlers that just looks like somebody's dad out there
cool.
trying to wrestle.
And it's cool, because that somebody's dad is also a Repo
cool.
Man.
Repo Man.
Yeah. And he's got that rope with the hook on it.
And he's always sneaking everywhere
he's
he goes.
Repoing
he's
cars
just
and
sneaking
stuff.
Sneaking
yeah.
like he's going to repo the match he's about
yeah.
to wrestle. He's got to
Hell
sneak
yeah.
up to the ring.
And you know, like, he likes the movie Repo Man.
See, if they would have minded that movie a little bit for some stuff... Maybe I could have came around on this. I just feel like this is the most thrown out there, least thought out idea in an era of just thrown out there. It's like, he's a repo man.
No, he was good.
That's a job, right?
He had it. He had it all going on. He was going out there stealing people's stuff or repoing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really stealing.
Repossessing
Don't
it,
be a jerk.
Apparently.
Somebody fell behind on a payment. Don't make Repo Man the bad guy in all this, you know? He's just doing a job.
I tell you, I didn't remember that Earthquake had a run as a good guy around this time.
Yeah.
I kind of just always remembered Natural Disasters being a heel tag team.
Oh, no.
Like
they had a double
big mean guys to
with
squashing
who?
People with their big evil bodies.
Who'd they feud with? They feuded with somebody and it turned them face.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't remember who it was.
Hey, look at that. Look at those assholes over there. Ordinary fucking people. I hate them.
Me too.
Did you hear on the announcing how much they were putting over Repo Man?
You got to.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to get over by himself doing this shit.
They're saying, like, they're like, this is, you got to watch out. This guy's the real deal.
This guy who we've never seen wrestle before, even though he's 45 years old, clearly, you know, he's got a future. He's got a future here. This new rookie.
You don't know how old he is behind that mask.
That's true. It was only a good 8 years before this that he looked like just like a tiny little baby boy as he was part of the Russians in the NWA.
Yeah.
That was 85, literally. Clearly just like a little baby-faced rookie. Here right. in 1993, 8 years later, he looks like the oldest guy on the roster.
Yeah.
He looks like a legend that they've like brought back for...
He looks like 20 years
of pity
passed.
Run. Like, what had happened?
I will agree
with Barry
that.
Darso between 1985 and 1993. Something serious. Or maybe just like a lot of lounging.
A lot of lounging and a lot of snacking.
Something.
He looked great, and he did a great job, and Repo Man,
and
there you go.
Disagree.
Repo Man. Repo Man. Got number three?
Moving along. Number three, just want to talk about Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
And his over-the-top comical selling.
Let's hold off on that for 1 second, because I want to talk about that too.
Uh-huh.
But you're burying something important.
Okay.
And that's Yokozuna. At the Hibachi.
Okay, Yokozuna at the Hibachi.
That's my number three right there.
I feared that this was just going to be a long, drawn-out segment that was an excuse for Mean Gene Okerlund to make ooh, sushi's gross jokes, which were de rigueur in the 80s and the 90s.
Right.
Ooh, and yeah, that's pretty much what was going on here.
But let's talk about the catalyst behind this skit right here.
Okay, what was it? Did you feel like there was one? Because I thought the catalyst was wasting time on this video.
No, it had to be somebody like convinced Vince to go to like a Benihana for the first time. And he's like,
which in, by 1993, like they were treating this like it was exotic.
Right.
Maybe in 1983, like the Benihana experience was exotic. This by 1993, no, it's not at all.
So you know that means
everybody's
like,
been to a fucking Japanese style grill.
Bruce Pritchard and whoever were like, we're going to go to this place. Come on. Like they got steak, they got seafood. And he's like, oh, goddamn, pal, I don't like Chinese food.
No, like, well, it's Japanese. It's not like that.
It's cool. Like they cook in front. Cook it in front of me. I don't want to see it. I just want to see it when it's ready.
Well, I need my entourage. Jim, Dwight, Ryan, come on. We're going to Asian Hooters.
Oh, man, I can't.
Why not?
I'm not feeling so well. I got a ton of work to do here. MSG allergy, peanut allergy. I just ate there last night.
All right. Feel better.
Thanks.
Come on, Jim. Let's go.
Okay. Wow. Thanks for taking all the excuses, dude.
Doctor appointment, car trouble, plantar warts. Granddad fought in World War II. He's your head man.
And so you know they just brought him in there and they sat down and he's like, oh, table's warm, pal. Like, oh, I gotta take my suit coat off. And you know his Vince McMahon brain was just blown
Vince McMahon fell in love with Benihana and was we need to make an entire show that's this.
Like when they're like, oh, you want to come up here and try to spin the spatula around on your finger? Like, you know, they like let Vince do it because they were all like, trust us.
If we know anything about
guy.
Vince, if he's ever getting like an opportunity to like bust out a dance move or something, he's going to take
doing it,
and he's going to fucking lean into it. He's going to.
How many shrimp do you think he made them throw into
caught
his mouth?
Into his mouth? Yeah, he was probably doing that.
Do it again. Do it again, Yoshi.
See if I can catch two at a time.
Throw another one, Yoshi. He was saying something offensive like that. So the skit was great because all I could think about was Vince experiencing a hibachi grill for the first time.
Really? Yeah.
So let's talk about Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
How much do you think... So this is the Bret Hart jerk-off hour of the, of the tape.
Yep. A new champ, Bret Hart. Let's get him over big.
Let's show
how versatile he is.
I thought you were, you know... treating me to something like, oh, we're gonna do this, it's gonna be a good time. I was excited, and then I was like,
uh-oh,
you tricked me into watching an hour of Bret
Hart. There's a lot of Bret Hart going
on. I hate that guy. Speaking of strokes, as he's stroking his own ego in these little interview segments and Gorilla's talking about how great he is. Yeah,
don't you know
how much do you think, well, how many takes do you think they had to do until he finally put over the line of Shawn Michaels coming up with the ladder match?
I don't think they were doing many takes because he was stumbling over everything and not sounding very articulate.
But he was still was just like, yeah, he came up with it. And you know, at least 12 times he was like, no, I used to do these
in Stampede Wrestling.
And I told Vince about it. And that's why they did the match.
Yeah, this is probably the bargain struck. Like, if you say this is Shawn's match, then we'll give you a whole hour on our next Coliseum home video release will be all about how great you are.
When did he have the title? When was this? Flair dropped it to him?
Flair was there in 92. And
right.
Then he was only there for a year. And then pretty quickly, like, he just went back to WCW. Vince was like, hey, we're not having old guys anymore, pal.
Yeah.
And it was just like done. And
this is
before they even
it.
Set up a thing, it was just like, dropped it at a non-televised event.
I was thinking he dropped it to Macho Man.
I think it was early 93 when it happened.
Okay.
But this whole match for me, this ladder match, was just...
Yeah.
I felt just like a tension. I was just like, they're having a very believable, just like
wrestling
grounded,
match?
Awesome wrestling match. Everything looks real. Everything looks like it hurts. Everybody's looking like they're trying to win the match at every point. But I just felt like... when is Shawn going to have enough? And when is Shawn going to need to showboat? And when's he going to need to make it ridiculous?
When's he going to be Shawn Michaels?
It all happened in a glorious, glorious moment. About, I don't know, this is a good way into the match. We're maybe 3/4 of the way through. When Bret slingshots Michaels into the ladder that's leaned up into the corner. And then he just like hits the ladder, does like a whole flip. Bump cell in the other direction. Does like a bunch of like a frog hitting a hot skillet, like bumping after that, and then just like another complete front flip for good measure, and then stops dead on the mat as if he's unconscious.
Yeah.
And I was like, there it is. There's that over the top Shawn Michaels. I'm not winning this match, so I'm gonna make a joke out of it.
Yeah.
I got it. But 90% of this match I loved. This is before ladder matches became a stunt show. It was just all about setting shit up and then like falling over. It just looked like two guys really trying to, climb up that ladder for real.
Right. It was the tension of the race.
You didn't get all that like super slow motion, like, oh, I can barely make it up the ladder. I can barely make it up the ladder. They were just always there to stop the other person, trying to scramble up and pulling each other down. Maybe one of the most believable ladder matches I've ever seen until that glorious Shawn Michaels moment where he had to do his Shawn Michaels piss on it, which I enjoyed in right for what it was. So I liked watching this ladder match.
I would like to rewind in this match for a little bit. The very beginning when the wrestlers were coming out and they just for no reason stopped on that mongoloid kid in the front row for 5 seconds as he was banging his wrestling figure against the metal railing.
I didn't see that.
What? It was amazing.
It's a good way to chip all the paint off your wrestling figure, man. You're not going to be able to get that on eBay as mint.
He just was holding it and smashing it against the railing and like clearly doing like some weird little kid yelling, just like, ah, as he was smashing the figure.
Only little kid I remember seeing it this whole time that they showed was just a young girl with glasses who was like just on the verge of being hot.
Ooh, the redhead?
Like, ooh, yes, I thought definitely the redhead. I don't know what point it was. I just knew it was in the video. Yeah. And I was like, that girl's just on the verge of being hot.
No, you can talk about it. We can walk through all of this because I put like the whole Brett segment as my number four. So,
oh, very interesting.
Yeah. So I'm down to talk about all this.
Okay. You want to just move into Flair?
Ready to talk Flair?
Yeah. So my number four is going into this Ric Flair, Bret Hart World Championship match, and how I just thought that it was a super interesting match from a ring work standpoint on both their parts. Number one, you got an interesting twist where Brett, he's working the arm the entire match.
Mm-hmm.
He usually works the legs and the lower back to set up that sharpshooter.
That's true.
But I don't know, maybe he's in there with a guy who's grappling he respects or something.
Ooh.
So he's like, I can't go with my usual stuff. He's going to have it all scouted. He's going to be for it. So he's throwing him off his game by doing all this arm work and staying on top of him that way. And then on the flip side
Flair
of the coin,
looked thrown off.
Flair is, he's getting out wrestled by Brett in every exchange. And this is not the standard Flair match.
No.
The standard Flair match is Flair gets the shit beat out of him. He's just kicking the piss out of him. But then he uses his wrestling to get the upper hand, and he out-wrestles the guy a little bit, then he gets back on top. I mean, you get all these little storyline things here where Flair's trying to do his usual shit, he gets flustered, he tries to go to one of his typical little wrestling grappling tricks, and ooh, every time, Brett's got the answer for it, he counters right out of whatever Flair tries to do, and he's right back on top of that arm stuff. And I was like, this isn't your typical Brett match, it's not your typical Flair match, but it's all the more interesting because of it. It makes sense. It's logical. It's cool storytelling. These guys, they don't have much respect for each other's abilities. But I'll say it right now, I got respect for both their goddamn abilities.
Well, Brett lost a lot of respect for Flair in this.
Yes, I've lost all respect for Bret Hart once he started talking about how he lost all respect for Ric Flair.
After wrestling Flair in that match and all the talk I heard about him being one of the greatest of all time, lost a lot of respect for him.
Wait, Brett, is this going to be one of those stories you tell about how you've lost all respect for somebody?
Yeah, I lost all respect for him.
Oh, yeah, okay, I just wanted to make sure if I had actually listened to where this was going or not.
I kept watching the match and being like, oh, this is actually pretty good, but then one thing kept standing out.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ, is Bret Hart boring?
I mean, yeah, as a good guy character, I've agreed with you. We've clashed a little bit in the past where I've been like, no, I really like Brett as a heel. I like his early stuff with the Hart Foundation.
The early stuff's great. I like his... But it shows a little piss and vinegar.
I like his, Canadian hero, hate American stuff later on, where he gets pissy and moany and a little bit more brutal in the ring.
What's his favorite run in WCW
for you? It's just when he's the big good guy, just like a generic, I'm going to beat you with my grappling style shit that I also find very boring.
Really, the only reason he's the good guy is because they say he's the good guy. He's got no fire. He's got no, like... Well, he showed a little bit of fire when he won the match and started saying, fuck yeah.
Yeah, he's...
A bunch of times.
The excellence of execution. Like, just a guy who's very technically sound. That's... Yeah. Who are you aiming that towards? This isn't... Look at your audience. What sort of technicians do you see out in your
None.
Audience? Yeah.
I see idiots.
And me too.
You know, I left tickets for Bill Buckner, but he couldn't bend over to pick them up. How about it?
Speaking of the World Series and the great tradition here in Boston with the Red Sox.
The city of losers!
I saw a fucking freak
they
show kid.
Burly, sloppy
smacking
brawlers.
Smacking a wrestling figure against a metal railing. You think he knows anything about execution?
I think just like that giving a kid his sunglasses shtick was just enough to get him over the top. Like,
yeah.
People liked that audience interaction stuff. That was enough to just keep him over the top, over as a good guy.
I love how 9 times out of 10, too, that sunglasses thing would creep the little kids out. They'd do like that. I'm shy.
Yeah, just cringing away.
I don't want to interact with an adult.
I don't
want to
get my picture taken with Santa Claus.
I don't know.
No, the Easter bunny's terrifying. Please no.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he should have just started giving it to, like, teenage girls. That's what I would... I guess we've been through... There are no more teenage girls in the audience at this point.
Yeah. Real quick.
Uh-huh.
Or is that all my fives? I don't know. You want to talk Taker?
I got one more.
Taker,
I got number
Ramon,
five. Also in that...
Maybe we're waiting on yours.
Also in that world title match, though, it's towards the end of it. After, you know, we're going into the home stretch.
Yeah.
They do something that nobody does anymore, ever, which was... Very important to wrestling, very important to main event matches especially, is that at the end of the match, they were selling their fatigue. They weren't wrestling as hard as they could wrestle anymore.
Because
they
were tired.
Struggling to get moves on. If they had to walk somewhere, they were limping and hobbling. They were moving at about a quarter of the pace
selling
that they started
the
match with.
Selling the effects of
the
match.
It was like, oh, we've been wrestling hard. We've been taking a lot of punishment. We're getting to the end of our cardio here. We're both just blown up. Who's going to finally fall? Because one of us can't take anymore. And nowadays, you just got like still at the end of the match. They're still doing it full speed. They're still doing all the athletic feat shit.
Yeah.
And then like they'll get hit. And then they'll register that they got hit, sure.
Right.
But then like that's what they think selling is these days.
All right. I got to do my 450.
Registering that you've been hit.
I got to do my 450
And then once
now.
You're like, okay, I sold. And then it's like, yeah, now I'm back on offense. And I'm fucking... Hopping over shit. I'm flipping on shit. I'm hitting those ropes hard.
Here comes my 450.
Showing people what an impressive athlete I am. It's like, no, that's fucking what you do at the beginning of the match.
Yeah.
Just, ugh. Ugh. These guys, two pros, two storytellers out there, they were telling the story of guys who had given it their all and barely had any left. And it's not just about, like, showing it on your face, but then, like, still moving well and still being a super athlete. It's about more than that. You gotta... not be as good anymore. You got to not be able to do your moves as well.
A limb has been targeted.
Please.
A part of the back has been targeted.
Give me something. Just
a neck, a whatever.
Modern wrestlers, watch this match and then do it and just shut up about everything you think about how times have changed or blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
No. That was my number five. I didn't really have much to say about the Ramon-Undertaker match. Pretty standard, just throwaway house show match.
Yeah.
Bullshit ending.
It was
both,
good to
both
see
those
them.
Those guys
though.
Are fun. Yeah. Like that first match. Good to see them.
Yeah. That was kind of my thoughts. Was
nice
just like,
era for both guys, I think.
Here's Taker.
Taker was just first getting over as a good guy after
Razor
turning.
Ramon.
Razor Ramon, you know, coming as the new hot shit.
God, the look of that guy.
Mm.
Oh.
It's not quite as much as, you know, the mustachioed cowboy he was doing in the AWA.
Oh, sure,
I like
sure.
that a little bit more, but it was pretty good.
But, I mean, that guy was a... specimen.
That's Smack 'em Whack 'em. It's a little break from WCW. It was, I think, you know, I had my quibbles, but I think it was a welcome reprieve.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
All right, let's take
fun.
Another welcome reprieve from talking. Let's get a lozenge or something and hear from
Ooh.
Our sponsors. We'll be back.
For the 50th three count.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Excuse me, Section E, Seat 102. Are those bugle boys you're wearing?
Why, yes, they are bugle boys.
We thought so.
By Jordache.
Check, baby, check, baby, 1, 2, 3. Check, baby, check, baby, 1, 2.
Mm-hmm.
Check, baby, check, baby, 1. All I want to do is do a 3-3 count and a boom, boom.
Yeah.
Just shake
count
and roll
to three.
Yeah, I don't know. That's all on the fly
there.
Pretty
good, yeah.
Yeah. It works, though.
Yeah, we can dip our toes into street music a little bit, I feel like.
Stupid lists you make.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting better at it at the moment. It's not necessarily our background, not our forte, but I'll be damned if I'll let somebody tell me that I can't, you know.
I like the crazy stance you take.
Pump out some street music and make it just as good as anybody else can.
Pump up my own point of view. Pump up the three count, pump up the three count, dance, dance. That was a good song. Pump up the volume. I like that song.
It is also a good Christian Slater movie.
Why don't we play that song at the bar ever?
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume, pump up the volume, dance.
I bet that's one of those songs where like we'd be like, yeah, and then it'd be like 5 minutes long. And like we'd be like, we've made a mistake.
True. Every once in a while we get a big bold idea as far as bar jukebox picks goes. And then like we forget about that jam session in the middle of it. And it's just like, oh, this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I wonder who played this. It wasn't us.
Sorry, everybody. I feel like a little bit of pump up the volume might be a decent transition away from like the dumb Drake songs that a lot of people play when we're in there, though. Like it's still just like in the party rap genre, but it's worth listening to, and we could just like ease them out of that fucking mood so it's not so jarring. And we just play something great and it sounds so fucking like strange juxtaposed coming right after that thing they played. It's just unlistenable. That could be a new strategy for us where we don't quite get in so many jukebox fights. We just ease people out of what they're listening to and they don't even realize their songs aren't playing anymore. People are dumb. That could work.
What would you say, Nate, if you were at a party?
Jamming on the one for sure. But, you know, I'm not at a party. I'm here in Baby Oil and Blow Studios.
It's kind of a party.
Professional environment, quite frankly, if you ask me.
It's a special day.
It's a special day. Maybe have like a sheet cake after we're done wrapping wrapping that big 50th episode.
Do not lie to me if you don't mean it. Is there really sheet cake in the house? I'm taking the headphones off.
There's probably somewhere open. We could
go look for the sheet cake.
We could go get a sheet cake.
So you don't have a sheet cake?
I don't have one prepared, no. I do know that you have a long, infamous, just well-known love of sheet cake.
This is the day I lost all respect for you.
Yeah, the day I lost all respect for you is when I found out that you were eating a piece of sheet cake for breakfast every morning.
Not a piece, a quarter.
A quarter of a sheet cake?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's not healthy.
That's your opinion.
I guess you turned out to be quite the specimen, though, so what do I know?
Yep. Look good.
The parenting that was going on, though, during that period where your mother was, like, buying a couple sheet cakes a week, though, questionable. I got to call Mrs. O's grocery shopping into question there.
Well, you know, they had bigger things at stake.
You talking about dealing with your older brother, Teddy Bizkliz, and whatever he had going on?
No, I think that all their eggs were in the Davey
R.
Shyster
they were just
basket
all trying to mold
like,
him into the perfect
let the other two
accountant.
Do whatever, mm-hmm. as long as they're not in jail, and let's just keep worrying about that guy.
See how that worked out? You're in jail most days.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I'm proud of myself for a second.
Nope.
That's backfired.
Yeah, the things have really backfired.
You know what they wear in jail, Nate? The same thing every day, because it's a jail.
Okay.
Much like in wrestling, but in jail... Mm-hmm. It is not cool.
No, yeah, that's true. You don't get to pick your own outfit in jail. You need to wear the one normal outfit. That's why I was real, upset when I was in jail. Because mm-hmm. they were just like, you can't keep these underwear unless they're just like, what is it, plain white underwear?
Correct.
And I was just like, ugh, That's weird. Okay, whatever. I'll wear your jail underwear you give me.
Yeah.
I'm a prisoner. I get it.
Yeah.
But then the jail underwear they gave me was not plain white underwear.
No, it's brown. I don't know where these came from. This is a newer thing.
What is that rule then?
It's a newer thing.
If the rule is you have to have plain white underwear, why don't you then give me plain white underwear? You goddamn prison guards.
Yeah.
This is all coming down from on top, I'm sure. Some sort of stuff shirt out there.
Or as they say in the jail,
underwear rules.
That's bullshit, CO.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to get the lingo down if I'm ever going to go back to jail again.
You got to fit in, man.
Knock on wood. Hope that doesn't happen unless, you know, I'm going back in as a political prisoner.
Yeah.
I could see that. That'd be cool for me.
Or in like a Rambo situation.
Starting to look pretty shaggy. I might have a few Rambo situations in my near future.
Mm-hmm.
That's for damn sure. But, you know, other than nails, there weren't very many wrestlers back in the day going to jail, so they did get to pick their own outfits.
Mountie did.
That's why we've decided this week for the three count, our pick was going to be, this is a big one. I've been sitting on this one for a while. It's real serious. This is going to be a big award for these people to get these best gear, best wrestling gear. Who is the best dressed out there in the wrestling ring? Who is looking most stylish, most slick as they were doing their, you know, their graps, their pro graps.
Nice.
It's gonna be a real eye-opener, I think, to a little insight into both of our sensibilities.
Yeah.
When it comes to fashion, we don't talk much about fashion.
No, but we've got opinions.
For sure. Let's get right into them. I want to hear your number three.
My number three might not be considered fashionable to some folks.
Sometimes
but,
that's the best fashion.
It's a look I don't mind, and it's a look I think really fits the character, fits the feel. Seems believable.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people were looking like it. I'm giving it to Mr. One Man Gang.
OMG.
Yeah.
How bizarre.
He's got the sweet OMC. OMG.
To get it.
See what you did. That's pretty great. That took me a second. He's got the black tights with the black tank top, the little skull and crossbones.
He does.
Unless, you know, he's a bad dude. He's got the jean vest. You
know? Solid jean vest.
It's like, hey. I'm like one of those warriors, you know?
I gotta tell you, I like a jean vest on a lady. You ladies out there, not enough of you showing up in jean vests for my tastes.
I'll concur. I'll sign off on that. And then on top of that, he's got the motorcycle boots to tie it all together.
Looking like a real street punk.
And then he's just like, by the way, I got a mohawk.
You gotta tie the whole thing together.
When our buddy Heikowitz was at his worst, just doing acid... And driving through people's lawns.
I thought that was at his best.
Well, some people would say worse, but when he was at his Crown Heikowitz.
Was he just listening to the Misfits while he was doing donuts in people's front yards back then?
Yeah, Danzig, I think it was. But either way.
Solo Danzig. That's right. That's how it went.
He was rocking a mohawk
He's
as well.
He's a family man now. We might have to bleep his name, though.
He
I'm
was
talking
rocking
there.
A mohawk.
He
because
was
he was stuck at a private Catholic school, and he was like, ain't no rules against mohawks here.
There weren't
here.
Rules against mohawks?
Nope.
That's surprising to me. It seems like at that point, after getting through the 80s, it would have been like, all right, we got to make some fucking mohawk rules.
You weren't
now.
Allowed to have unnatural colored hair. But they didn't say
didn't
anything.
Say anything about how you could cut it.
Well, you weren't Fools. Supposed to have it longer than your collar. But he found a loophole.
These stuffed shirt religious fucks.
Yeah. So One Man Gang...
It's weird because
I
like
your style.
My number three who I picked, I feel like if you were going to like create some sort of King of Trios team, like if they still do the King of Trios, I don't know if Shikara is still a promotion.
I think they do
okay.
that, yeah.
These guys would have paired well with him. They got a similar look. They got a similar feel. I'm talking about the Nasty Boys. I got them as my number three.
Ooh.
Which, similar to what you were saying, like, it's real hard, I feel like, to A, dress up a fat guy to be a pro wrestler, and B, to dress up like a street brawler as a pro wrestler.
Right.
Because unless you're doing, like, the cowboy boot fat guy look, like, it's real hard to, like, not make a guy
Which
look like
every
shit.
Every fat guy did in the 80s.
It's
so,
real
like,
hard
by
to
the
make
time
a guy
late 80s
not look
came
like
around,
shit just in wrestling gear. On the flip side of that, if you're just going to have a guy wrestling in, like, street clothes, like, cut-off jeans and, like, t-shirt with the sleeves cut off, like, it's just riding that line just looking low-rent and indie too much, like, fucking mid-90s WCW where everybody's just wearing street clothes and it just looks like a jack-off little fly-by-night thing.
Right.
If you're running a real slick wrestling promotion, you want your guys to still look like these, like, branded fucking pieces of talent that you can do. But I feel like, yeah, One Man Gang did it well, and I feel like the Nasty Boys did it real well, just riding that line between street clothes but also wrestling gear. They wore the black trunks, so, like, they're still in decent gear.
Right.
And they had the sleeveless cut-off shirt, but it wasn't just, like, you know, Raven's Dinosaur Jr. No. shirt, shout out. They had their own fucking stylized shirts.
They were graffito tagged.
Graffiti, they had splattered paint all over them. Graffito
looked nice. Tagged.
And then they also were rocking the nice mohawks to let you know they were punks. But then, bringing it all together, the sunglasses, they were also splattered with paint the same way as the, and then, super cool was the trench coats.
Yeah.
Just airbrushed trench coats.
Airbrushed leather duster.
Logos and shit all over them. It really just brought them together. It was like, yeah, these guys look like trash that are coming off the streets, but they also look like a sort of just like branded, well thought out, like, larger than life couple of dudes.
Class
on
Nuke 'em High.
It's
like,
not just a couple
cool
of fat
shit.
Idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. They look like it could have stepped out of the movie The Warriors or something.
Yeah.
It
I
wasn't just like
shit.
A fat guy who would fall out of your local pub and then somebody's paying him to wrestle for some reason. No, it's clear like these guys got money to buy some gear because they are good fighters.
Right.
Even though they're nasty as I want to be, baby.
Yeah.
They rode that line, rode that fine
Plus,
line.
Plus, that sleeveless tee
mm-hmm.
perfectly sets up the pit stop.
Yeah, that's true. You get
Which
your armpits out.
Yeah.
It's a good way to do that awesome, awesome move, sticking somebody's face in your sweaty armpits. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, I'll get myself a Nasty Boy shirt. That's a pretty cool shirt.
Oh, I'll rock one with
you.
Know,
just like
Hell
a couple
yeah.
of matching Nasty Boy shirts. Just, you start wearing them around.
Oh, shit, yeah.
I think
it's gotta,
time is
yeah,
right.
They got to exist somewhere.
The time is right.
That's a really good idea. Another good way to make fat guys look like street ruffians.
Mm-hmm.
Public Enemy. I mean, it doesn't count. They're not on my list because it's not the 80s, but they're pretty cool, huh?
Anything involving basketball shorts needs to stay the fuck out of my wrestling. That's how I feel.
But what about their football jerseys?
Early career CM Punk. Get your fucking basketball shorts out of here,
ooh,
Phil.
Ooh, careful. He's one of them Wilmette punk rockers.
Yeah. Ooh, scary.
You don't want him coming after you. I went a different direction
Move
here.
Right along. Put loose and fancy free.
We're not a street ruffian here. This guy cares about what he looks like.
Real
carefully.
Pretty boy.
Carefully coiffed looks. It's all about the hair, baby.
Mm.
It's all about the jumpsuits.
Mm.
And you get rid of those, and by God, he had a pretty nice set of tights underneath. And I'm talking about, he's cool, he's bad, he's cocky.
Mm-hmm.
He's the honky-tonk man.
He certainly had the hairdo down, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, yeah. I liked everything that made the honky-tonk man the honky-tonk man.
Yeah, it's another thing where, like, I'm going to give you one of my best gear deals. It's got to be custom-made shit that, like,
and he's
looks
custom
like nothing
head
that anybody
to toe,
else
brother.
Is wearing. Head those Elvis
to toe.
Jumpsuits, yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They really fit in, because, like,
they weren't
they're
Elvis.
Not normal person clothes.
Yes, and they're not Elvis. Like, they're clearly somebody made honky-tonk man
they could
jumpsuits.
Sort of pass as athletic gear. Like, I don't know. It was the 80s. It was the age of aerobics. There was
well,
probably something similar to this out there.
He came out with that and the guitar, and then he'd take those off, and then he'd have the sweet wrestling boots
mm-hmm.
and a different kind of honky-tonk
like,
man tights underneath.
I like the simple just like music notes on
yeah,
the butt.
On the
like
trunk,
honky-tonk
on the trunks,
and
yeah.
the music butts. It's a classic look.
Yeah. It was all there, head to toe, man. Like,
yeah, that's a good pick for sure.
Yeah.
And these little last two picks, both the little thread connecting them, both managed by Jimmy Hart, and both gave Jimmy Hart the opportunity to come out in gear that was tailored to their gimmicks. He had his, you know, his airbrushed Nasty Boys helmet and his airbrushed Nasty Boys coat. He had his airbrushed Honky Tonk Man coat. Just the gimmicks were so strong, very easy for Jimmy Hart to just piggyback off of him and make his own custom shit.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Airbrushing. It's a versatile tool.
The shit out
that
of
more
him.
People need to use in their day-to-day lives. I've always said it.
Absolutely.
My number two, stylish motherfucker, the most stylish man in the world. Everybody knows that. Just infamous for it. He's kind of an obvious pick, but I gotta throw him on here because he's head to toe custom made. That's a nature boy, Ric Flair.
Mm.
First off, you know, you got these robes.
The robes.
These robes are just $10,000, $20,000 robes. These glamorous, befeathered, bejeweled robes. They let you know that, like, not only is this guy above me, he's above all these other guys that are wrestling too. Like, this mm-hmm. guy's fucking rich. And that's because he's such a good wrestler.
Yeah.
Then you take that robe off, and he was no longer ostentatious. He's very simple, very classic, yeah. just monogrammed but plain tights. But what really put his look over the top was the color coordination that he was always on point right. with, which I totally appreciated. From the boots to the trunks to the knee pads, he had it all coordinated. It all just looked very classy, like something a rich dude would wear.
That's why Val Venus's boots break your brain to this day.
And it's why Ric Flair started breaking my brain in the late 90s when he just randomly starts showing up with like black boots, red boot, or red whatever. It was just like, he just started mismatching his shit. And it was like, yeah. whatever was clean that day is what he yeah. take to Nitro. And you could just tell that like, dude was checked out and didn't care anymore. And I was just right. like, oh, Flair, like, I don't even want you in the ring anymore, man. Just show yeah. up in like a fucking baller suit and be a talking head or something. Because when you're showing up, like, he'd show up in just like t-shirts sometimes. I get yeah. that was like the NWO era and things were getting more gritty and street level and everybody was doing that shit. But Ric Flair shouldn't have went with it. He no. should have stuck to his color coordination.
He was a classic grappler.
Stuck to his beautiful robes and... there was a brief period there where the Nature Boy had lost his way, I felt like, and it was one of the big ways I could tell that, because he wasn't color coordinating his fucking gear anymore.
Yeah, you lose that spark, you lose it all, man.
It's, I don't know, it's strange. I have no fucking predilection towards fashion or dressing in the real world.
I hate clothes, okay? I hate buying them. I hate picking them out of my closet. I can't stand every day trying to come up with little outfits for myself. I think eventually fashion won't even exist. It won't. I think eventually we'll all be wearing the same thing. Because anytime I see a movie or a TV show where there's people from the future or another planet, they're all wearing the same thing. Somehow they decided this is going to be our outfit. One piece silver jumpsuit, V-stripe, and boots. That's it. We should come up with an outfit for Earth, an Earth outfit. We should vote on it. Candidates propose different outfits. No speeches. They walk out, twirl, walk off. We just sit in the audience and go, that was nice. I could wear that.
If anything, I put more effort into like looking like an idiot than I have looking
sure.
good.
Sure.
But there's a weird part of my brain that's always been a little bit obsessive about pro wrestling gear, A, and like also superhero outfits like
ooh,
when I was a kid. Like,
yeah.
This shit would always drive me crazy. Like, you get, like, superheroes and just be like, oh, he's got this costume I really like.
Right.
And then they'd change the costume, redesign it, and be like, oh, that's all wrong. Or, like, even weirder yeah. would be when there was, like, he was in this one costume and, like, I liked the shit about it, but that sort of bothered me. And then, like, they'd change his costume and I'm like, ooh, I like this about this new one. And then it'd be like, but if you could just combine those two into one costume, like, it'd be
the perfect costume.
But he's never in it. And then, like, if my obsessive brain would get weird about it. And, like, nothing pissed me off more than Bret Hart's gear. Because he always had that winged heart in the middle that was a little
sure.
bit left off center instead of being in the middle.
Yeah.
And my weird obsessive brain that wanted everything just to be like, you know.
Symmetry.
Symmetrical. And yeah, yeah. it was always like, why the fuck is that thing cocked off to the left? I don't know. I guess maybe we call up Mark Ligas and have him say maybe in his book, Brett explained why that shit was always left to center.
It was also the day you lost all respect for Bret Hart.
I lost all respect the day I was just like, oh, somebody made his gear wrong. Like that heart's not in the middle like it should be. And then like he showed up again in another one.
Like
and I'm like, that one's to the left. They're all to the left.
It's like he doesn't even notice.
So yeah, Ric Flair just really like... got my obsessive brain just soothed because it was always coordinated and really nice. And Bret Hart always just like, maybe I'd be like, ugh, send this guy back to Canada, man. Somebody teach these fucking Canucks how to dress.
Plus that RF.
Mm-hmm.
Classy as fuck.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice font.
Like,
I've patterned my handwriting after it to this day. Like, everything I write down looks
rightfully
just
so.
Like that.
Rightfully so. My number one is a common thread.
Oh.
And you touched base on it already. And I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm giving it to my guy, Jimmy Hart.
Oh, wow. Mouth of the South. Very strong.
You picked up on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one common theme, and that was the mouth, man. And his coats,
mm-hmm.
later in years, even his megaphone.
And just
like
throughout the night, too. Like, he's doing Beyonce-level,
right.
Cher-level costume changes.
Yeah. Like, I love Bobby the Brain Heenan. Don't get me wrong. He's always dressed badass. Mm-hmm. But he's wearing like a Bobby the Brain Heenan outfit.
Yeah, he'd come out with this guy. Not he was Jimmy in his Bobby Hart. Outfit. He'd come out with that guy's in his Bobby outfit.
Not Jimmy Hart. He had different looks for different crooks, man. Like, didn't matter who he was bringing out there. He had something specifically for those people.
Right now, I just want to be clear. Are you talking about Jimmy Hart, the owner of Jimmy Hart's Bar and Tiki Deck, where you can get cold canned beer right on the beach?
Correct.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. You like tikis,
throwing
right?
that out there. Anybody who's down there in Florida, look it up.
Yeah, what town is that in?
Jimmy Hart's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill. That's right, Daytona Beach, Florida. Is this unbelievable, baby? As you can see, I'm hard at work in here today, man, but hopefully we're going to have this open by Valentine's Day. You know what? I ought to bring the Hammer Craig Valentine in for autograph. It's going to be unbelievable, baby.
You touched base on it. That Nasty Boys coat he had.
Oh, super.
Was one of the best.
Super pretty.
So, Jimmy Hart, your hair, your glasses, your Converse, it was always on point. You're a superstar. We love you.
Hall of Fame Bar and Tiki Deck. Ice cold beer in cans. You're not allowed to have bottles on the beach.
CTE.
My number one.
I've got it.
Is my number one. Much for the same reason that Ric Flair was my number two. I always liked his color schemes, man. I liked his coordination. But where Ric Flair was classy and understated,
Greg
this
the
guy
Hammer Valent-
was
no?
over
okay.
the top and fucking wild. And he was 80s as fuck. And he always looked classy as fuck, like a pro. He cared about the way he looked. He is just like out there thinking about things like this, how to present himself. And he's just like one of the best pro wrestlers ever. And that's why all pro wrestlers are so jealous of him. And they always talk about how bad he was. It's because he got it and they didn't. I'm talking about the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
I'm talking specifically Icy Title Run Ultimate Warrior, where he'd have the classic Ultimate Warrior outfit, where he'd always have, it was set up, there'd be like about three colors.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd always have the head to toe, it was just those three colors. And his tassels, his boot tassels, his arm tassels, and his face paint, and on his trunks, and just that. And like every time he'd come out with a different color scheme, he'd be colorful. But within that scheme of every little outfit, it always made sense.
Right.
And once again, I don't know, it pissed me off later career, once he started getting those WWF title runs,
yeah,
he started experimenting. I get wanting to change into things up, but I think he had one of the classic, iconic looks in pro wrestling, and then he starts, you know, warrior symbol on your face, warrior symbol on your butt tassels. It worked.
Yeah.
And he starts wanting to do shit like airbrushed fucking singlets and
right.
just like painting one tiny little warrior fucking symbol just on your cheek and stuff.
Yeah, and I didn't like that.
Oh, no. It was like, warrior, your classic look was so good, man. I get that you wrestled Rick Rude and he was wearing all that airbrushed gear and you got real jealous of it and wanted to sort of jump on that train, but that can't be for everyone, man.
There was a mystique, man.
He was, yeah, he's larger than life.
That's what made him the superhero he was.
80s as fuck. He just looked like something straight out of a comic book, quite frankly.
Right.
And it was like if Spider-Man showed up in a different outfit in every fucking comic book, it'd be like, oh, what is this going on? What is he? He's wearing like a light blue sleeveless shirt over a red Spider-Man outfit now? What the fuck is this?
How come Spider-Man's only got a little bit of cloth over his nose and everything else is exposed? Yeah, no.
Oh, God. Get these variant Spider-Man outfits out of here.
Full warrior mask, sir.
Ben Reilly, you Scarlet Spider motherfucker. And I didn't want anything to do with you in the 90s.
A lot of people like that outfit.
Yeah, this is dumb. I don't know why.
It's stupid. They're stupid. What are we doing next week?
Going back down to WCW.
Oh,
put
God.
It off. We put it off, but we got to face facts. We got to make it happen.
Oh.
I don't know the exact date. It's whatever one happened after the first Clash of the Champions. It's our big follow-up show to Clash of the Champions.
Oh, that should be a hot one.
Yeah, we'll see what happened.
Tie up some loose
Sting
bits here.
Wasn't quite able to win that title, but he took Flair to the limit. Let's see how they capitalize on this.
Fucking done.
See how they capitalize on it next week.
But we do on Baby Oil and Blow.